Yeah, so I'm going to speak about Riemann-Hilbert problems which arise in the theory of Frobenius manifolds. And for the case of Hurwitz Frobenius manifolds, I'm going to present solutions to the corresponding Riemann-Hilbert problems. So this will give us the second class of solved Riemann-Hilbert problems related to the Hurwitz space. The first large class of Riemann-Hilbert problems related to the Hurwitz space, for which we know the solution, is the class of Riemann-Hilbert problems with quasi-permutation and ordering matrices. And the solution was found by Dmitry Korotkin. So here we study an essentially different class of such problems. So they are related to Frobenius manifolds. Frobenius manifolds were introduced by Boris Dobrovin. And they visualize the geometrical structure behind the WDVV equations. So these are differential equations for a function of n variables, which are written here in the matrix form, where all entries here are matrix functions formed by third derivatives of the function. The Frobenius manifold structures were found on different spaces, and in particular on Hurwitz spaces. Hurwitz spaces are spaces of pairs, a Riemann surface and a meromorphic function on it. But originally such structures were described by Boris Dobrovin, and later they were found two new classes of Frobenius structures on Hurwitz spaces, which were called the real doubles and deformations. Deformations are obtained by introducing a parameter into the construction here, and real doubles are Frobenius structures on the real Hurwitz space. So they are of dimension twice the dimension of the Hurwitz spaces. And to each Frobenius structure, they correspond a Riemann-Hilbert problem. So to each of these families, we can associate a Riemann-Hilbert problem. And actually, there are two Riemann-Hilbert problems, a Fuchsian one, where a solution has regular singularities, and the non-Fuchsian one, where the solution has an irregular, an essential singularity. So I'm going to focus on the regular case first, and then in the end I hope to speak also about the Fuchsian case. So these two problems, Riemann-Hilbert problems, were already mentioned in the talk by Dmitry Korotkin, where he discussed the Bergmann-Tau function. The Bergmann-Tau function is exactly the isomonodromic Tau functions for these two Riemann-Hilbert problems. Okay, so first of all, there is the Frobenius structure. And on this transparency, I have the main parts of it. So there is a distinguished set of coordinates called the canonical coordinates, which I denoted by lambda i's. Then there is a Darboux-Egorov metric. This is the main ingredient of the Frobenius structure. The Darboux-Egorov metric is a flat diagonal potential metric. It has a diagonal form in the canonical coordinates. And the potentiality means that there is a generating function for these diagonal coefficients. And flatness of this metric is provided by some system of differential equations for rotation coefficients. Rotation coefficients are defined for any diagonal metric like this. And then the potentiality is equivalent to the symmetry of rotation coefficients. Then the flatness is provided by these two conditions. And the fourth differential equation comes from other axioms of the Frobenius manifold. So this system is a very important system. It's kind of central in this theory and in my talk. So first of all, every solution to this system corresponds to a family of Frobenius structures. And then in the dimension 3, the system for rotation coefficients is equivalent to the van Leeuwen 6 equation with the given coefficients, this one. And the other property is that this system governs the isomonodromic deformations of two linear matrix differential equations, which can be built for any Frobenius manifold. That is, this system is the Schlesinger system for Riemann-Hilbert problems I'm going to speak about. So I will speak about Hurwitz Frobenius manifold. So first, I will present a solution to the system on Hurwitz spaces. And here on this transparency, I have the two linear systems, differential matrix systems, which we built from the ingredients of the Frobenius structure. So the Fuchsian system and the non-Fuchsian system. The matrices which enter the systems are built from the ingredients of the Frobenius structure. The matrix U, which enters the equation here, is just the diagonal matrix formed by the canonical coordinates. Then the matrix gamma, its entrance just the rotation coefficients. We have the matrix gamma here and here, and the matrix V is also formed by rotation coefficients and canonical coordinates. And the matrix EI is just the matrix with one non-zero entry, which stands on the ith place on the diagonal. So we have these two linear systems which are dual to each other. The solutions are related by the formal Laplace transform. So here the solution has regular singularities at lambda i's. And the solution to the non-Fuchsian case has a regular singularity at zero and the essential singularity at infinity. So here we have the monodromy group, and here the monodromy data consists of the Stokes matrix and the connection matrix. So as I said, I will first focus on the non-Fuchsian case. So here is the Riemann-Hilbert problem, which corresponds to that differential matrix equation. From the general theory of differential equations, we know that this equation has a solution in the neighborhood of zero. And then in the neighborhood of infinity, outside of this disk neighborhood of the origin, we have two solutions in each half plane. So for each line dividing the plane into two half planes, we have two solutions which have these asymptotics at infinity. The matrix U is our diagonal matrix. And then the two solutions, psi right in the right half plane and psi left in the left half plane, are their boundary values are related by the multiplication with some constant matrix, which is called the Stokes matrix. So the Stokes matrix and then the connection matrix, which relate the values of solutions on this boundary, together with the matrix U with the canonical coordinates, constitute this the monodromy data for the equation. So the Riemann-Hilbert problem is to reconstruct the three solutions psi left, psi right, and psi zero, starting with the monodromy data, with the matrix S and C and these asymptotics. So far we know neither the solution to the equation nor the monodromy data. And that we are going to find. So as I said, I will consider that system on the Hurwitz spaces. So that's the system corresponding to the Frobenius structure built on the Hurwitz space. The Hurwitz space was already defined in the talk by Dmitry Korotkin. I will just briefly repeat. So this is a moduli space of pairs, a Riemann surface and a meromorphic function on the surface. The meromorphic function defines the surface as a n-fold covering of the Riemann sphere. There is a ramification in this covering where derivative of the function vanish. So we consider this space locally in the neighborhood of a covering with simple ramification points, where all the ramification is simple, which means that there are only two sheets glued together. The projections of the simple ramification points are called the branch points, and they play the role of local coordinates in the Hurwitz space. They are denoted by lambdas They are going to play the role of canonical coordinates on the Frobenius structure. So they are denoted by the same letters. Okay. And then we consider the complex structure on the real surface, which is defined by the function f. And then when we vary lambdas, we vary the function, and therefore we vary the complex structure on the Riemann surface. So the next question is how all the objects defined on the Riemann surface depend on this variation, how they depend on lambdas. So all objects we now consider as objects on the Hurwitz space, depending on the point on the surface and on lambdas. And the main object for my talk is the W bidifferential. So this is the differential with respect to P and the differential with respect to Q. It can be defined by its three properties. It is a symmetric bidifferential, it has a second order pole at the diagonal, and all its periods vanish. From these properties, we can derive the Rauch formulae, which give us the dependence of the bidifferential on the branch points.
All the periods, or just the Rauch A period?
A periods vanish. So this is an important object, and actually the Frobenius structure on Hurwitz space can be written in terms of this bidifferential. So from this Rauch formulae, we can see the following. Instead of P and Q, substitute the two ramification points, then the formula will look like this. And then they will exactly coincide with the differential equation written there. Well, in the system, the second line of the system. And then it turns out actually that all the other equations are also satisfied by the W of PIPJ. So these quantities give the rotation coefficients for Frobenius manifolds on Hurwitz spaces. So that was first observed by Kokatov and Korotkin. These quantities give rotation coefficients for the Frobenius structures on Hurwitz spaces described by Paris de Broglie. Okay, so now we have rotation coefficients, and we built the differential system. So the Riemann-Hilbert problem is now formulated using the W. Right? So V is formed by rotation coefficients, and rotation coefficients are given by the W differential. And I forgot to say that the Bergmann-Tau function, which was discussed in Dmitry Korotkin's talk, is also defined in terms of the bidifferential W, right? And that tau function is computed, and that tau function is exactly the isomonodromic tau function for our Riemann-Hilbert problem. Now the solution to this equation in psi zero, the solution in the neighborhood of the origin, is also written in terms of the bidifferential W, like this. We have W of PPI. PI is a ramification point times this exponent integrated over some contours gamma j. So there are n contours on our Riemann surface. And in this way, we obtain n different columns for our matrix. But then we have this factor 1 over square root of z, which gives the singularity at the origin. So what are the contours? The contours give the basis in the so-called system of Lefschetz thimbles. A Lefschetz thimble is a contour on the Riemann surface, on this covering, which comes from infinity to the neighborhood of a ramification point, goes around the ramification point to the other sheet, and goes back to infinity. So these are Lefschetz thimbles, and if you consider the set of all such thimbles, then in this in that set we can find a basis, and basis will consist of the contours gamma listed here. So well, here I mean, of course, the two contours coincide if such integrals over contours coincide. So the contours are the A and B cycles on the surface, then cycles around each infinity, then contours connecting to infinity, and there are also cycles in the neighborhood of a branched infinity. So there was in the case of three-dimensional Hurwitz space in genus 1, a solution was found by Boris de Broden, but it had another form, and it is still unclear how these two solutions are related. So now, outside the neighborhood of the origin, this solution doesn't work, because when z goes to infinity, we have to take care of this quantity. We have to take care of the asymptotics. And we do that by choosing different contours gamma. So the formula stays the same, just the contours will be different. So here are the two solutions, psi right and psi left. They only differ by the contours here, C right or left. So the contours I have here, the green contours correspond to the solution in the right half plane, and the blue contours correspond to the C right. So these are projections of the contours to the base of the covering. To integrate over them, we have to leave them on the covering, and then we'll obtain the Lefschetz thimbles I just described. So here, the green contour comes from infinity, goes around the branch point, and goes back to infinity. After we lift it to the covering, we obtain the Lefschetz thimble. So the angle for the contours is related to the angle of the separating line, which separates the plane into two half planes.
Could you just remind, lambda p is the mirror morphic function?
Lambda, yes. Lambda.
That's what you called F before.
Yes, yeah. Lambda is just the coordinate actually on the base. So lambda of P is the projection to the base. Yeah, but it is equal to F of P. Yes, right. By lambda, I denote the coordinate on the base. It's not good to denote it by the same letter. Okay, so the next question is to find the Stokes matrix. The Stokes matrix connects psi right, takes psi right to psi left. And as we know, the only difference between psi right and left is here in the contours. So the matrix S is actually the matrix which transforms the set of green contours into the set of blue contours on the surface. And then we can calculate for each given covering. And on the next transparency, I have some examples of these Stokes matrices. So, of course, the matrix depends on the configuration of the branch points. And we can fix that configuration so that the Stokes matrix have the lower triangular form. So we do that, we make some assumption, and then the Stokes matrices look like this. So here for a two-dimensional Hurwitz space in genus 0, we get this Stokes matrix. If we now glue one more sheet by two ramification points, we still have genus 0 but dimension 4. And then the Stokes matrix looks like this. So here on the diagonal, we have the same blocks as in as for the previous case. And if we glue one more sheet by two points, we again do not change the genus, and the Stokes matrix has now three such blocks at the diagonal. Again, for hyperelliptic, well, for genus 1 hyperelliptic covering, the Stokes matrix is a bit different and has this form. And here I have the monodromy matrices, monodromy around 0. Well, it's not the monodromy, it's the Jordan form. So we can see that there are non-trivial Jordan blocks of size 2 for these coverings. Okay. And now I want to say, I want to speak about the Fuchsian case. So we know that, we heard that in the talk by Philip Bolsch, that there is a correspondence between the Stokes matrices and the monodromy matrices for the Fuchsian system, right? And actually the correspondence is quite explicit, and we can find the monodromy matrices if we know the Stokes matrices, the Stokes matrix. And we also know that there is the two solutions are related by the Laplace transform. But that still doesn't help us to find the solution to the Fuchsian problem. And why is that? And I also have to say that there are actually the whole hierarchy of such Fuchsian systems. But we can change the half integers here. So for any half integer, here we have a Fuchsian system. And they are all related to the same non-Fuchsian system. We just take the Laplace transform and change the power of z here. Okay, so I'm going to discuss the system, the minus one half here. This is the solution we just solved for the non-Fuchsian case. And this is the Laplace transform. So although they look similar, it still doesn't help to find a solution for to find phi, knowing psi. And why is that? In psi we have n independent columns in the matrix. Yeah? Those columns we obtain by integration over n different contours. And to do the inverse Laplace transform, we have to choose one of the contours and do the inverse Laplace transform with respect to the chosen contour. So that will give us more or less explicit expression only for one column of the matrix phi. So this is the problem. So we more or less have to solve this problem independently. And it can be solved again in terms of the bidifferential W. So the formula is here. We first define phi I as a multivalued differential like this, and then integrate this phi over a set of contours, a set of different contours on the Riemann surface. So the contours are, for example, we take one of the ramification points, let's say P1, and integrate till up to a point on one of the sheets. So there will be n minus 1 contours like this, from P1 to a point on the first sheet, from P1 to the point on the second sheet, and so on. Then there are, of course, A and B cycles, and the cycles around infinity. So this is how the solution to the Fuchsian system looks. And again, for any given covering, we can compute the monodromy matrices. And here are the monodromy matrices. We can say about them that they are all, of course, the square of all these matrices is the identity matrix. Then all these matrices can be represented as an identity matrix plus a rank 1 matrix, as you saw in the talk of Philip Bolsch. And, yeah. That's it. So, for the two-sheeted covering, we have only one column which changes under the analytic continuation, because the other columns are either constant in lambda or linear in lambda. Well, so there is only one contour which is non-closed. Other contours will give us some constants, or for the integral over A and B contours, and residues at infinity do not change. So here we have only one column which changes. Okay. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you very much.